What up? It's your boy Tiny Sumo coming to you with another episode. But before I get down with my guest, let me get my plugs out the way. Go to dirtycleaneats.com. Check out the product there. You can find them on Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, and YouTube, and listen to their podcast, the DCE Pirate Radio podcast on iTunes now. Use the code DCE Tiny Sumo for 10% off in store. And if you go listen to their podcast, you can get a code for 20% off. But I'm not going to give you that code. You've got to go listen to their podcast. And while you're at it, make sure you head over. You're liking my Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, subscribing on iTunes. Leave a review, leave a comment, leave a like. It's all much appreciated. But I think that's enough for now. So let me get down with my guest.
Hello.
Robin, how's it going?
Good, brother. How about you?
I'm very well. Thank you very much for taking the time to have a chat. I really appreciate it.
No problem, man. No problem. Where are you?
I'm in Melbourne, Australia. So, I wouldn't normally set an alarm. I wouldn't normally be awake at this hour. But I thought, you know what? There's a couple of people I'll set an alarm for. Robin Black is one of those people.
Oh, man. Thank you. That's super cool. I've never been to Australia. It's one of the few places I haven't been. And I'm desperate to go there, but I'm also these days under the impression that work can bring me, or, you know, art, I call it work. It's not really work, but it can bring me to these places. So I'm patiently waiting for a gig in Australia.
I was going to say, look, out of all the places, I'm surprised you haven't been here yet. I'm sure that you will get here soon. We do have a very thriving fight culture. So I'm sure at some point you'll end up here for a show. But that is something that I want to talk to you about, how often you travel, how regularly you travel, where you travel, because you seem to always be on a plane. You seem to always be in a new country.
And I do love it. It's not easy because, you know, that's sometimes it's 20, 25, 30 hours. Last year I was in China, Russia twice. Korea, you know, Singapore, some of these places are 25 and 30 hours. But if you find, you know, you figure out how to do the thing you love to do, you know, now I can do it mobile. So I can be doing my work. I can break things down. I can't voice it on a plane, but I can draw and analyze and play with things and write. So I can still do the stuff I love too, but it's very hard on the body. My left shoulder is all messed up. I fought 9 times and, you know, I boxed a bit and kickboxed a bit and did jujitsu. I competed in jujitsu on the way up to that point. And I figured it was that, but I saw this guy, Dr. Stu McGill, who is this brilliant, brilliant, physio guy and expert with the spine and with the nervous system and musculature and everything. He's a good friend. I've learned a lot from him. And I was showing him that and he's like, nah, you know, it doesn't seem like a repetition injury from striking or fighting. What else did you do? And I said, well, when I was coming up playing music, I was a hairdresser for like 15 years. And he's like, yep, 100%.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're going to screw up. You're living in your body. Right? Mm. So you're going to do stuff to it. Everything you do in your life at the end of, you know, however long we're fortunate enough to live at later in your life, there's going to be repercussions for everything you did. Some of them would be like, you got kicked in the head. That's not great. Or, you know, you drank too much alcohol. Now your liver's all messed up or whatever you put in it, however you treated it. But the one that's, you know, in my case, also my fascia on my feet is really fried from my last fight and the lead up to it and stuff. So that's bad. But the worst one is my elbow. And yeah, he said it was from being a hairdresser, before I went and kind of fully pursued fighting and martial arts and what I love.
Now, that's interesting, too, because I didn't know about the hairdresser part. I knew about the rock star part. I knew about the fighter part, you know, but that's interesting to hear then, too, that the hairdressing part's taken a toll. Like, that's what the doctor's picked up on. He's going, oh, no, look, the shoulder's probably not that bad. Doesn't look like a Kimura. Doesn't look, you know, it's not that angle. It's the fact that it's the standing up. It's the being at a certain angle. Whatever it may be.
Yeah, you are the outcome and the consequences and the, you know, results of everything you've done. And that's a great thing. Like, that's an amazing thing, you know. And hairdressing I did because I was always an artist and I needed to make money while I was playing in a band. You know, I make a pretty good living now. And that's all. I'm almost 50. And it's only in the last few years, as I would work my brains out to get better at the things I did. And then whatever money I would make, I would reinvest in trying to either learn more or try to grow whatever the thing was or whatever. I've always done that. And it's really just in the last sort of 3 years where suddenly I'm like, I'm, you know, able to make much more of a living than I put back in to keep growing. And now, you know, and that is the result. I'm literally almost 50, and it's the result of from the time I was a teenager until, I guess, 2016 of just working hard, reinvesting, keeping my spending low, and just continuing to grow, believing that one day I would be able to do the things that I love to do and make a really nice living. And that day's finally kind of here now. So that all of those things come as a result of your life. You know, your shoulder's fucked up because you were a hairdresser, which you did to make some extra money to pursue music, which doing that, you learned how to craft things and how to use words and how to direct music videos and edit things and so forth. And they're all connected. Everything is connected to whatever point you're at in your life. And the exciting part about that for me is if we anticipate 5 years in the future or 7 years in the future, if you can stay healthy enough and mentally and physically healthy enough, you can extrapolate those things. Well, what if I learn to play piano and being a, you know, in astronomy and invest a little bit of money in a small piece of and figure out what some of the results of some of these choices will be, and years in the future, you can shape your life. And I know that now because I can look backwards at the things I did that brought me to this point where I'm finally happy, you know, successful, stable, doing the things that I love every single day, all day, as a living and as a lifestyle. And that all happened because I went for 30 years, I worked on that. It's a weird thing, man. I'm at this very introspective point where I feel good about this stop on the path. When you do, you should stop for a bit and go, well, if this is good, how did we get here? What went well? Where were the errors? Where do we make mistakes, and how can we streamline it so it'll be even, you know, hopefully as good, or maintain this happiness, or even grow more over the next 2, 3, 5 years?
It's fantastic because I'm able to point to people like yourself. When I have people ask me about, so say the podcast and the avenue that I'm trying to take with this and you know, other avenues I'm trying to take via the podcast and things like that. When people ask me, oh, so are you making money? I say, no, I'm not. But I'm investing time and I'm investing passion, and eventually that will grow into something. I'm almost viewing it as my internship. You know, I feel like this is the time I'm giving for free because I know eventually that something good will grow out of it. And I get to talk to people like you, you know, like that's something too. I've been very lucky. I've been able to talk to a couple of really, really, really cool people that I respect and that I follow and that I get to see on these other platforms. And I've been able to do, and if nothing else, if I can take nothing else, I get to take that exciting, fun aspect of it. But like you're saying, you know, you've started here, you've moved to there, it's been this thing and that thing, and then eventually it's grown into this great thing. And I get to look at people like yourself. The best thing about social media and the internet for me has been things like this, has been, you know, the ability to talk to people like yourself and go, oh, wow, no, that I can see that there's been a point A, a point B, and a million points in between, and eventually, and you're looking at the next point as well. So that's very exciting for me.
Yeah, I think you're always sort of gonna, once you see it all as one long flowing river, like, you know, I study martial arts. That's been what has been my passion, but it's not the only thing in the world. But at the same time, it connects to everything. The path of understanding how to learn something and what applying effort to that thing does and unlocking new little curiosities that teach you another little moment and where that leads. All of a sudden, you study that enough in anything, in podcasting, in music, in baking, in anything. And it starts to be seen everywhere. You know, the path to going from being a white belt to a black belt is exactly the path. You know, the process of it, the learning, the setbacks, the failures, the improvements, the looking ahead, but not too far ahead, the assessing what's working and not working. That's everything. That ain't martial arts or podcasting or, you know, building a house. That's just all things. That's all things. Yeah. And that part, that truth becomes more in your skin and in reality as you go. It's a really fascinating time. Like you were just saying, it's like it seems scary when you look around and a lot of older people, you know, my age, some even slightly younger than me, and certainly older than me, are looking around and saying, oh, this is disastrous. Everybody's on their phone all the time. Everybody's, you know, we have an addiction to entertainment or whatever it is. And it, of course, that can be bad. But if we are, for whatever reason, we've got into this mode where we're hungry to keep consuming, that can absolutely be consuming knowledge. You know, when people listen to podcasts, Joe Rogan's fucking funny and smart and stuff, but there's deep shit to be learned when he has conversations with successful people, right? That's knowledge. You can take, I didn't know how to edit videos literally 13 months ago. I had 6,000 Instagram followers 13 months ago and I had no job. And what's it, April? Yeah, maybe 13, maybe 14 months ago. And in that time, I taught myself to edit. I taught myself to animate. I taught myself to understand sort of how this modern version of media works. Like what we call social media is just what the internet is right now. It's not that word or that category. Somehow people sort of diminished, mostly because people who were in movies and television only 5 years ago looked down their nose at it because they liked the world the way it was. It's just the modern way that media and ideas are shared. I had to learn all that shit because I wanted to keep doing what I do, which is analyze fighting. I used to do that in television only 2 years ago. I did it in television. I would show up at the studio. I'd put a suit on. I'd go on to a set and I would just talk about martial arts. And it was exciting. Once that was gone, I then had to go, okay, well, how am I going to do this? Shit, I've got to learn to edit these things. I've got to learn to voice these things. I got to learn to use a microphone. I have to learn to podcast. I have to understand these platforms. That seemed like a shitload of stuff a year ago. And here we are a year later, and I have 100,000 subscribers on Instagram consuming the 500 videos I've made since then. And I'm in San Jose right now, being paid really nice money to do this, what I'm doing anyways, for DAZN around Bellator. And next weekend, I'll be covering the UFC for TSN. And the week after that, I'm back in Chicago for Bellator. And the week after that, I'm commentating TKO on Fight Pass. The week after that, I'm looking at my schedule. That's why, and I'm saying this out loud. The week after that, I'm in Connecticut for CES. After that week, I go to London, England to comment, or I'm in Ontario commentating BTC, their fights. Then London, England, the week after that for bare knuckle boxing. Then I go to New York, Madison Square Garden, where I cover Lyoto versus Chael Sonnen. I have 1 week off, and then I commentate TKO in Quebec City and cover UFC on ESPN. And that's the next 8 weeks. That's what I'm doing. And a year ago, I had no job, really. I did work for TSN, which was still a television job. I'd wear my suit and go in and talk about fighting. And I'm glad. I'm very thankful that still exists, too. But yeah, a year ago, I didn't have any of these things, not a fucking one of them. And I didn't know how to build 1 minute breakdowns. And here we are.
It's fantastic. Cause just to think about, like, even the, I guess, like the quote unquote social media aspect aside of it, right? So the editing side and everything else, it's amazing to think that if you had have said 10 years ago, that's what, like, I'm talking about just from like a fight fan perspective, someone involved with MMA or combat sports or whatever it may be, if you had told me that outside of boxing that you were able to do that, that you were able to travel to multiple countries, multiple states for multiple promotions, you know, and commentate across multiple platforms, that would have been insane.
I'd be talking voodoo. Like it would be magic at the time, literally magic. It's like science fiction or some type of voodoo, because the technology didn't exist for me to do these things. And these platforms didn't exist. And you know, for a lot of people, they look, and if they're over 30, they think it's so intimidating. They think it's all for kids. And of course it will be easier for a 16-year-old who's entire. When I was fucking 20, they didn't have the internet barely, you know, cell phones existed as giant bricks when I was in my 20s, like a big giant brick. Some of them were attached to bags, but this stuff is just stuff. Our whole life, we've learned things. Like once upon a time, we didn't know how to speak. We didn't know what apple juice was. We learned that stuff. Like you learn for the rest of your life. And that's the other really inherent thing to once you kind of enter this process of flowing through life as this continual, you know, this growth mindset where wherever you apply effort, you will learn, and wherever you learn, you will grow, is you get better at the act of getting better. You improve your ability to improve your ability. So now it's not as scary to take these things on because you're in a constant state of learning. That's what's so fucking mind-blowing about some of these 12-year-olds and 15-year-olds out there. It isn't just that they have access to this stuff. It's the idea of constant improvement, whether they're aware of it or not, it's just happening with them. That's why you see 7-year-olds that hip-hop dance, you know, or box on mitts or whatever, and you're like, how are they doing this? It's like they're in a from the time they were young with hyperplastic, like, you know, brain tissue, and they're creating neural pathways in ways that are even easier when you're a child. That's taught themselves to learn constantly. So, but that's life. I mean, it's all here. I was a 47-year-old man who had just been laid off a television job 2 years ago. I didn't do anything magical, but all the things I had learned from reinvesting my time and effort into trying to be a musician, an artist, which is an artist, you're crafting these things, and a performer, and then a martial artist, and then fighting and training. And I was a martial artist as a kid. That continued search to grow and learn makes it easier to grow and learn later. But anybody can learn that, and anyone can do that. And we have at our hands that if you decide tomorrow, you know, I always wanted to play violin, you fucking go on YouTube and you go learn to play violin. And you do it in, yeah, you still take a break on Sunday to watch Game of Thrones because Game of Thrones is awesome. But the other rest of the week, you don't waste it and you learn shit. It's just all right there. It's all sitting right there to be done.
The YouTube aspect's crazy as well. And I've spoken to a couple of guys who are very, very heavily involved, I guess, in like the technique uploading side of it. Some really good jiu-jitsu guys and things like that. Yep. And it's been the same sort of discussions. Kent Peters, who's a good friend, via the internet, which is another crazy thing. Amazing. You know, he's another fantastic internet friend. And it's funny because I'll bring it up to my wife. I'll be like talking about Kent and, oh, you know, one of his daughters is sick, and she'll be like, oh, okay, when are you going to go see him? I'm like, no, he's in Sydney in Canada. I won't be seeing him anytime soon because I'm on the other side of the world, but it's fun to be able to, you know, like it's mm-hmm. still interesting to be able to be involved in people's lives that way, you know, have incredible back and forth, that sort of thing. But that's the same thing, you know, like he's talking about that he was in an area where jiu-jitsu was not readily accessible. He had to drive, you know, hours at a time to attend seminars. He was a judo guy. He found some other guys he could roll with, and he jumped on the internet and he found videos on the internet and he went, okay, we can learn this. He's a black belt now and a well-respected jiu-jitsu yeah. guy, and he does fantastic breakdowns. But that was his ability to do that. A lot of it was via the internet. He talks about it too, and a couple of other guys, where it's interesting to hear their take on like YouTube technique, where it's like, oh no, you know, there's people out there that are very against the idea of you picking up a technique from YouTube. And then there's almost this new generation of like, oh no, jump on YouTube. You can find fantastic stuff on YouTube.
Yeah. And there's bad gyms in your town with mediocre teachers, and there's brilliant ones in your town. And that's true on YouTube too. And you know, over time, when you're brand new, and you know nothing about karate or tennis or, you know, cooking a steak, whatever, anybody will be of value to you. Somebody's like, this is a steak, this is a barbecue, this is how you heat it. Well, you didn't know that yesterday. But as you get better at it, you get, and you don't just blindly follow dogma. You'll be like, you know, this guy seems, maybe I should see what else is out there. And you start looking for them. You slowly develop the ability to be able to tell something good, mediocre, bad, might be good. You trial and error. That tool, that skill is going to be really valuable when you turn the news on and some politician is saying something. You know, that skill is going to be really valuable when you fucking go to a real estate agent, or like you have a lawn care specialist come to your house or something. That skill of being able to differentiate and using your own knowledge and your own, you know, bullshit detector and being burned once or twice is going to be a valuable life skill. So going into you, and that's most of the people who say, who are against YouTube jiu-jitsu or whatever, are just old, and they're unwilling to change and they fear change, which is a little more rare for martial artists, but it's still there. It's the, you know, as for artists of any kind, but it's still there. But one of the things I'd say is, oh, yeah, well, you'll get bad technique. Well, you get bad technique down the street, too. And the ability to differentiate and slowly be able to learn the difference and try to develop the ability to be able to discern real, expertise from not real expertise, that skill is going to come in super valuable in life. And this is where the holistic nature of doing anything, of making YouTube videos about jujitsu or, crafting or knitting or fucking playing soccer or anything, the holistic nature of learning to do it and pursuing it brings you all of these other valuable skills that you practice in there. And that's a big one. Turn your news on and you and three friends that you grew up with in high school will hear two people have a disagreement, and one will think the other one is correct and the other one think the other one is correct. And the smartest one eventually will be the one who says, I don't really trust both of them. I'm not really sure they both have motives of their own. And that skill will be developed over time by things like this, spending too many hours being taught a bullshit alma plata by a terrible YouTube jiu-jitsu coach. But that experience was for you in the long run,
Absolutely. Now, look, talking about YouTube and online and everything like that, you'd mentioned earlier, and it's one of the things that I do love, the 1 minute breakdowns. You've done 500 of them.
I think more like eight or 900, I think. But I'm not sure. I've lost track.
You've done over 500.
Yeah, because they're accelerating now. So I did like 13 this week, where at one time they would be four that week in a week.
But this week you pumped out a heap of Bellator ones. I saw, obviously leading up to the fights this week in which you're working, Bellator.
Yep.
Now, how often are you watching fights? Because it's one of those things, it's your job. I understand it's something that you're passionate about and you love and all that's involved with it. But how often are you actually sitting down there? And now is that like, are you watching them all the time as work? Is that something that you just like, every time the fights are on, I've got to watch them in that work mode? Are you ever able to switch off and just, watch them in fan mode?
I can't. I watch them. I mean, yes to both of those things. But when I watch a fight, I just know this is so because I've been me with less knowledge and me with this much knowledge, and one day I'll be me with more knowledge. So I can compare the experience. I connect to them very, very differently, and I can't unconnect to them that way. Like, I can't not see the feints, or I can't not see the big thing for me today, and something that I know I see differently because I get complimented by Joe Rogan or Dominic Cruz or Matt Serra or any of these guys, is I see it different than they do in whatever way, and all skills develop only from repetition and hard work. So I've watched 100,000 hours. I don't know if that's accurate. Let's say 40,000 hours of fighting in slow motion and fast motion and detail, frozen, zoomed, etc. for the last 5 years. And probably nobody else on planet Earth has done that. Certainly not many, and certainly not from the purpose and the way I'm doing it, which is in a constant state of learning. So somehow over time, I'm now experiencing not one guy's fight or the other one's, but I'm experiencing the relationship between the two of them. And it is very, very fascinating. And it's very pleasurable for me. Like, I feel like I'm somebody who can see secrets happening. And I'm experiencing something in a way that's truly, that it's a gift. It's not a gift because you were born with some weird thing. I wasn't born with anything. But the hard work has led to this very, very cool experience of being able to feel through feeling. Sometimes I can't phrase it right yet. I'm still working on the language. It's all still kind of developing. But I'm experiencing the combat between two individuals in a way that very few humans probably do. And probably maybe none. Maybe we all experience things slightly differently. So it's super unique to each individual. But the fight is a holistic event between two humans. It's not a guy trying to do something and then this happened. I'll never unsee it that way. But what will happen over time is I'll view it and experience it different again a year from now or 2 years from now, because this has been an ever-changing thing. But it's the great gift of my life is that the real, you know, reward isn't making a nice living or getting to travel or, you know, getting to be friends with Joe Rogan, like any of these other really cool things. The great gift of my life is the experience, what I experience when I watch martial arts now. And so I'm always a fan and I'm always seeing it this way. It's also why I can do 20 of them in a week now, because I know for a fact that there's something in it that I just felt and saw and connected to and was blown away by that I can show. And that's the beauty of it for me, is by doing it, having a different way to get here. I do commentate fights. I've commentated for sure more fights. I've been, you know, honored, or like I have the great gift of being able to commentate only, you know, some of the old classics in boxing, Joe, Moro, like only a few people have been able to sit there and do that job more, because John Ramdeen and I, to get just the two of us together, have done like 250 fight cards. And so I do that. But over the last 5 or 6 years, I just, even my friends and people I admired greatly, I just don't listen to any of their commentary, like almost ever, unless it was, say, well, almost ever, you know, it would have to be some specific reason, because I can't get to where I'm wanting to get by emulating the way they do it. And a big thing of where I, you know, the great way, pleasure and cool way that I get to experience it now, is because I'm just viewing and experiencing and sharing an art, very much how it's been done, especially in America, especially for the last 10 years, is from a contextualized as a competitive sport. And of course it is that, but the Americans, UFC, everybody, all of them, they commentated the way that baseball or hockey or football is commentated. And I don't, I don't want to, I don't like sports. Like I don't like any sports. I like music and painting and art and poetry and dance and gymnastics. And I guess gymnastics is a sport, but I don't like the way that American, I just don't, as a fan, as an experience for me, I just don't like watching American, North American sports. So I don't view it that way, and I don't talk about it that way, and I don't experience it that way anymore. And part of that is even somebody like Dan Hardy or Rogan, who is, you know, a friend, wonderful friend and a brilliant mentor and one of my favorite people, been incredibly generous with me. I'll occasionally listen to Joe just because listening to him experience it is so pleasurable. Joe loves it. He fucking loves it. He loves to sit there. He doesn't have time to fly to Cleveland on a Friday to go. He doesn't, with his podcast and he sells arenas out. He just doesn't have the time to do that. He does it because he makes the time, because it's a pleasure for him. So I'll sometimes listen to him do it just for that. But I don't want to do it like they do it. There's certain things you can't avoid. You still have a play-by-play guy. There's still periods, 3 periods, and there's still a 1 minute break between these periods. And there's still, you know, introductions, and there's still hands being raised. But to me, it's just an art form. And so that's how I experience it. And that's how I commentate it. And it's the great, it's just, I love my wife, and I have an old dog that I just adore, and I have some very close friends. But outside of that, martial arts is my life. Like it's what does it for me. It's what excites me and thrills me and gives me energy and scares me and makes me sad and all of those things.
I love it. It comes across, and it's something that I can genuinely appreciate and connect with, and because I feel the same way. And that comes across, and that is why I enjoy your commentary so much. That's why I enjoy your breakdown so much, and it does come across that way. And I enjoy a different take, a varying take, a more artistic take. It all comes across, and it's all appreciated. I appreciate what you do. I'm sure that I'm not the only one. There's plenty of fans out there that do, and I look forward to the breakdowns regularly. I'm always checking them. I'm always scrolling through Instagram. I'm always clicking on them. I can't wait for more of them. No, that's all right. Thank you for doing it. I mean, that's the other thing that we sort of take for granted as well. It's free for me. I click on my phone and it's there. It's free. I can watch other fights. And that's interesting too. And like you talked about the breakdowns, because I'll sit there with friends and we'll both watch it differently. And it depends on the friend. And, you know, like I'll sit there with one of my good friends who I started this with, who got me involved in podcasting. he's a jiu-jitsu coach. I was a striking coach. And so we watched fights very differently together already. And after watching a lot of your stuff, we've decided we've jumped online. We're doing our own little sort of commentary thing now as well, because we saw how much joy you got out of it. We saw how involved you were in it. And we went, hey, look, this looks like fun. Let's give our own take. Let's see what you can do, what I can do. And that's been a lot of fun. So thank you for sort of, I guess, pushing people like us into doing things like that too.
Ah, oh, man, that's so cool. Like to hear. And when people, there are some amazing things that people have said to me in the last year or two. And that's definitely one of them, that you enjoy things or see them a different way. And some people will tell me that they started a karate class or a jiu-jitsu class because of things I said or showed, and things like that just boggle the mind. Like, you were talking about, you know, people will ask you, are you making money from podcasting or, you know, your social sites or whatever? And it's like, none of that. And there are some cliches that have been around forever, because of course they make sense, right? Like, if you love it, it's not work. Then if you're doing it out of love, whether you were to make money or not would be irrelevant. Because of that, you'll do it authentically. And because it's authentic, you actually increase the likelihood that you will make money. The big mistake, so I don't want to knock good people. So, and I'm hesitate to even say this, because I don't want to come out bad, and I would not want it to come out personal or anybody to take offense from it. So I met Jim Norton at a dinner that Joe actually threw, and he was just such a cool guy. And I've met him only twice, and he seems like an amazing guy. And Matt Serra is a fucking gem, right? Just this wonderful guy. But I just clicked on a couple of little commercials or like little teases for their podcast. And they were like, on the podcast tonight, we have coming up, and then switch to each other. And it's like, there's somebody telling them to do that way. There's somebody telling these two brilliant men, a brilliant martial artist and a hilarious creative comedian, to act like television fucking, you know, talking heads to make what feels like a commercial to use on the internet. And it's like, none of that makes any sense. And if and when I bump into those guys, if I can phrase it as kindly as I hope it's coming out now, I would say that to them. I'd be like, don't let these guys tell you what to do. If somebody who's been assigned to make the commercial for your podcast, which is made by two cool people, don't let them tell you to do it a way that they learned to do it 7 years ago. If you're trying to advertise your thing, if you're trying to market it in a certain way, if you're trying to package it in a certain way, it's also why I don't listen to other commentators. It's the same thing. If you're emulating what came before you, you're already too fucking late. You're too fucking late. If you're doing it authentic, for as much as we talked about how there's, you know, more technology to allow this, that you can learn anything, that's all true. But also at this exact same time, and maybe for the same reason, I don't know, maybe it's all connected to the same way that we're changing as people. But authenticity is fucking real. Like, people want it. In a world where everybody has played a role, you act like Dan Rather, or you act like, you know, the anchor, or you act like the politician, you know, or you act like whatever. And people lie to you, like politicians say, speak in code. They don't talk the truth. And you're exposed to so much acting and role playing that the truth seems really weird and powerful. The truth shouldn't seem weird. The truth is just the truth. Like, the only reason the truth seems and authenticity seems so powerful is because there's been so little of it around. So if you do things the way that's true for you, you do things passionately and truly, you of course you need to care about other people and their feelings and stuff. That has to be, that's just what it is to try to be a good person. But you should speak the truth. And if you do that, your podcast will grow, your sites will grow, the things you do will grow, because we want to see the truth. And you're most likely to do it if you're not worried about money. Paradoxically, if you're like, well, we need to really monetize this thing, you'll start acting different. Or somebody's like, we need to get this song on the radio, they'll start writing it different. And that different will be emulating what came before. And all of a sudden, a brilliant comedian and a wonderful martial artist are acting like TV hosts. Do you know what I'm saying? And yes. So the fact that you are just doing it out of love, when somebody asks about money, and it's very difficult to tell them this, even incredibly supportive people, really, and real artists. I mean, my wife is has been incredibly supportive, but there'll be times where she's like, you know, why don't you try this? And it's, she's brilliant. And same thing with other close friends. I'll say, well, do it this way. And I'm like, that way feels like the way everyone would do it. And it just doesn't feel right to me. And over time, it takes time to prove that doing it your own way will work. And it's very difficult. People will start being like, why are you wasting so much time doing this? Why aren't you, you're not making any money. Why don't you not do it this week? And you'll get that even from people you love, wonderful people that you love. But the only way it will work is if you stick with it with an eye on doing it for a long time. And the only way that'll work is if you fucking love it deeply and connect to the thing that you're doing. If you love it, and you do it your way, and you don't try to find some shortcut that you think will make you $100. Like the amount of $100 t-shirt sponsorships I turned down for my breakdowns over that last 6 or 8 months before I started to do them for bigger companies with better fights and bigger things. You know, somebody would, a t-shirt company that will be around only for a few weeks would say, I'll give you $100 per breakdown if you wear my t-shirt. It's like, of course I'd be. But if my audience says, like, there's just something about it that just didn't feel right, what I wanted to do was break down brilliant fights with big footage, big, meaningful things. And wearing, as much as there's times where that $50 or $100 would make a difference, especially if you did 5 or 10 of them, in the long run, is that going to get you faster, slower, or potentially no difference towards where you're actually trying to go? It's all, there's a million, I'm farting out all kinds of things because I haven't been able to have this conversation. We've been so deep in fighting that the under the hood parts of the business I haven't been able to talk or think about all week because it's been such, you know, the beautiful nature of just being immersed in martial arts. But all of this is an art form of its own. Expression, figuring out how to send some truth and some meaningful message and share it with people and grow it and get it to where you're trying to go. All that is a martial art all its own. And once you see it that way, you love it. You love it and you love the whole journey of it.
Absolutely. Now, look, I know I've got to let you go. I would love to keep talking to you. I could talk like this forever, but I know that you're a busy man. I know you've got work to do. I know you've got places to be and fights to watch. So I will not hold you up anymore. As much as I would love to, as much as I could keep going, I know I've got to let you go. So I'll take the hit there. That's fine. Before I go, though, I mean, obviously, you probably don't, you know, I like to give people a chance to get any plugs they want to get out of the way. I like to give them an opportunity to give any mentions for any things that are coming up, anything like that. So if there's anything that you want to mention, anything that you want to plug, please do so now. And I'll tag it in all my uploads as well.
Oh, thanks, man. Well, let's do this again. Like, circle back in 5 or 6 weeks, and let's target 8 or 9 weeks and catch up. Some things will have changed, and we can add to this conversation. I've enjoyed it a great deal.
Of course.
Well, I normally tell people that you can, my 1 minute breakdowns, of course, and now I'm doing two. I did a 2 minute breakdown of Liam McGeary today on Twitter and Instagram TV, but I'm at Robin Black MMA on both Twitter and Instagram TV. And I have a Robin Black MMA Facebook page somewhere too that I've been using. I got back on Facebook because my mom missed me on Facebook. But I'm shocked by how many people like have been, you know, some of those videos will get many tens of thousands of views. So people are still seeing the art. So I hope people check that out. There's one other thing that's just popped up in the last few days. And that is I was nominated for Fighters Only MMA Analyst of the Year. And Fighter, this kind of shit never, like my band was nominated for awards and I was nominated for this one before and stuff. This kind of stuff never really meant that much to me, but it really does right now for some reason. I think it's because I was nominated 2 years ago and it was a Sunday and on the Tuesday, they shut our entire department at the TV channel I worked at in Canada. And in those two, this is a reflection of those 2 years since. And I'm nominated with Dominic Cruz, Daniel Cormier, Michael Bisping, and Paul Felder. The first three are UFC champions. Fucking Cormier has 2 belts right now. And to be in that group is mind-blowing. And so I hope people consider voting for me if they like, you know, my hundreds of crazy breakdowns. It's just there's something about that. You know, these last couple of years have been a pleasure, and I've learned so much, but it hasn't been easy. Like, even when you're doing what you love, if it takes 70 hours a week to do it, you get exhausted and you get tired and you get sometimes discouraged. And this feels like a milestone, win or lose. But I hope people would vote for me. It's the big MMA awards show in the world. And to be on a list with those guys is pretty freaky. I think you just go to fighters.com or use Google Fighters Only MMA Awards and it'll come up and people can vote for me. And then they have a big party in Vegas, and I'm going to get a new suit jacket for it.
Nice. We will post that up. I've posted a couple of those up already. Phil Daru from ATT has posted up for Strength Coach of the Year, for Trainer of the Year. So I've posted his link. We'll post yours. We'll get people voting. We'll get people on that boat. Robin Black, this has been a pleasure. I will take you up on the offer of following up in 5, 6, 8 weeks. Whenever you want to talk, I will set an alarm and I will make time for that.
Let's do it, brother. Thank you so much. That was my privilege.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Robin. It's been a pleasure. We'll talk soon.
Bye.
Cheers. Bye.